This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Scott, welcome back on the podcast. Full disclosure for our listeners right now, I asked Scott to come on the podcast earlier. He jumps on just moments ago and tells me that he's on vacation. So Scott stepped away from a vacation to join me on the podcast. That might be the hardest working columnist I know, to step away from a vacation to jump on a podcast.
Well, Connor, I am trying to get a big raise, you know, but actually this is so, it's such a pleasure doing a podcast with you that I don't consider it work.
I appreciate that. Hopefully you can crack a beer and relax, you know, because I think a lot of Warriors fans are not relaxed. And I think that that's exactly what they need in their lives. This has been a pretty tumultuous few weeks for Warriors Nation, for Dub Nation. You know, obviously you have Klay Thompson's injury. Then you have the positive coronavirus test from James Wiseman and Draymond Green. Then you have the absolute drubbings against Milwaukee and Brooklyn on national television. You still have Draymond Green out with a foot issue. And then you get Marquese Chris with coming down with a broken leg, and Marquese Chris being a key part of that center rotation. Now it's looking like there's a chance he could miss the entire season. I mean, when you wake up each day and you see the latest batch of bad news from the Warriors, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking it's going to be a rough year. I'm thinking this is going to be like an ultimate up and down year, an ultimate roller coaster, because there's like two or three teams in the league, the Warriors being one of them, that are just going to be all over the map. And it's not only because of the injuries and everything, but because the guys they have, you know, they got two or three guys like Kelly Oubre being one, and like two or three other guys, you know, that consistency is not their big thing, right?
Right.
And just, you know, the teams they always had, Draymond, Steph, and Klay. You know, Klay would go cold at the times, and even Steph a little bit, but basically you knew what you were going to get from those guys. And these guys, there's three or four of them, you don't know what you're going to get, including James Wiseman. You know, we'd like to think we're going to get a steady 18 points a night for him, 7, 8, 10 rebounds. But you don't know. So, for many, these guys could be sensational one night. They, you know, maybe they'll beat the Lakers. Maybe they'll beat the top teams. But they're just going to be way up and down.
Yeah, and the first couple weeks of any season are interesting because you always enter a season with a certain measure of optimism, whether or not you're the media covering the team, whether or not you're the team itself or the fans, it's easy to lean toward a glass half full approach. Especially when you're talking about a team like the Warriors, given the fact that they are a really competent franchise, they're well run, they tend to make sound decisions, and they have a winning pedigree. It was easy for me as the beat writer to kind of throw out last season and enter this season before Klay's injury saying, I think they can be the rare team to exercise the memory of a league worst record and come out and legitimately contend for a title. Now, obviously my narrative changed a little bit once Klay went down, but even after that, you came on the pod and we talked about expectations for the season. And I said that I think there's an outside chance that if all things go well, that they could be a top four seed in the West. Now, here we are.
I think, as I remember, I predicted they'd win six games this year, right? Isn't that what I said?
You predicted all this. You predicted the Marquese Chris injury. You predicted Draymond and Wiseman positive test. You're basically a soothsayer over here. But the interesting thing is that we're a week into the season and I'm already realizing the flaw in a lot of my logic there, because for as I said a couple weeks ago on the pod, for this team to be a top four seed in the West, literally everything needed to go right. Now, the reality of not just an NBA season, but life is not everything goes right. There are always things that come up that change the situation, that change expectations. And so I thought more realistically, this team was probably like a sixth seed in the West, somewhere in that 6-7 range. What I'm realizing now, and you don't want to glean too much from just three games, but I do think that those three games have been forceful enough to make it very clear that this is not a top four team in the West by any measure, by any standard. But I'm realizing that if everything goes right from here, obviously a lot of things have already gone wrong, but if everything goes right from this point forward, this team to me is at best a sixth seed in the West. I think more realistically, they're somewhere between 8 and 10. Now, keep in mind, you have the play-in tournament for the playoffs this year. So a 10 seed, you could still potentially get into the playoffs. I think that they're somewhere in that 8 to 10 range more realistically. And I also think it's very possible that they just end up being a bad team, that they end up being a legitimate sub-500 team with no serious shot at the playoffs. I think that is actually more likely at this point than them being a seed in the West.
Yeah, I think we're back to the pre-Steve Kerr era where the 3 years before that and under Mark Jackson, even when the team was improving, every year going in and early on, it was like, can this team make the playoffs? And even going down the stretch, it was, can they make the playoffs? You know, one year they made it as the last seed, and then they made it a couple other times, but it was always touch and go. So, yeah, it's going to be the era of the short five-year era of guaranteed making the Western Conference Finals every year was when the season started, it's pretty much down the drain. They may have done themselves a favor by getting smoked in those first two games. They certainly lowered everybody's expectations, right?
Right.
You know, after those two horrible, you know, people figured it's no surprise they're going to be an 0-2, but to lose that badly and just look that terrible in almost every respect, I think it just changed everybody's mindset, all the fans for sure anyway, and maybe some of the players too, that, my God, this team's going to struggle and we just better, you know, embrace it and get out of it what we can.
My biggest reason for concern entering the season was the fact that Steve kept preaching, we need a top 10 defense. We need a top 10 defense. I don't blame him for that. I think that's actually good coaching to try to get his players to believe that. But just as an objective reporter of the team, I heard that and I thought, that is not possible. That's just simply not possible. No reality can that happen. This is a team that had the fifth worst defense in the league last season. And they're without their best perimeter defender again in Klay Thompson. We don't know what Draymond is right now. I mean, he didn't look great last season. Even if he's at full strength and the Draymond of old, I'm not convinced that he single-handedly can make this not just a top 10 defense, but a top half of the league defense. Because they don't have any other proven defenders. I mean, you're asking Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre to be your go-to perimeter defenders, which, yes, they have length, yes, they're athletic, but they've never proven at any point in their careers that they can be even consistently above average defenders, much less lockdown defenders. So that to me was the big question. And you've seen through these first three games, they've been absolutely abysmal defensively. And the thing about defense as opposed to offense is it usually takes a while longer for the offense to come along. Hopefully defensively, just by buying in and playing hard, you can be at least okay defensively.
Yeah.
But they've been downright awful, which affects their offense because this is a team that wants to get out in transition and run. And to do that, you need to make stops and you need to rebound, which they also haven't been doing. And so, and then you add in the fact that offensively, they don't seem to really have an identity right now.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking because, you know, Steph had the first couple of games were kind of rough. He bounced back last game scoring wise, but his shooting percentage is still down and he's not knocking down the threes. And I don't think there's anything wrong with him because obviously in practice the other day, he made 105 threes in a row. So obviously his stroke is good. And when he got hot last night, his stroke was good, but he's not getting the same shots. You know, Steph used to get, I don't know, I'm just going to guess, like three or four threes a night from the corners, right, where he would give up the ball, go through about three cuts and wind up in the corner and get the ball back and have an open three or close to an open three. He's not getting those anymore. Now he's getting the shake and bake around two or three guys at the top of the key and do a step back. And so the shots are harder. He's not getting the, and Steve Kerr's whole thing when he came in as the coach was, I'm going to get Steph better shots. And he did. But now we're back to the earlier times when Steph is not getting as great as shots. And so that's going to hurt when he's your number one guy.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
To me, the biggest takeaway, and I wrote about this today, but to me, the biggest takeaway from last night's game was not actually Damian Lee's game-winning three, which was beautiful, but
yeah. It
was the fact that Kerr is making a concerted effort to simplify the offense. He admitted today that he made a major mistake already this season and that he went into training camp feeling a profound sense of urgency and decided I need to get them to figure out this offense. I need to bring all the newcomers up to speed as quickly as humanly possible. We just had a 9-month hiatus from games. We have a 3-week preseason where I need to unload as much as I possibly can and install as much as I possibly can as quickly as I can because of this shortened time frame. And what he's realizing now, less than a week into the season, is that was a mistake because just because the timeline has changed, it doesn't change how people learn. It doesn't change how people digest information. Just because you need to know something doesn't mean you're going to be able to. And understandably, these guys have had a hard time picking up the nuances of a pretty complex system. Keep in mind, this is a system that doesn't really rely on plays. It's a read and react system. So it's all based off reading a situation and knowing what to do as opposed to having a set play where your coach dictates what you have to do. It's a lot more objective.
Yeah, in a way, it's like learning how to read music.
Right.
You know, you're going to be a concert violinist. You got to learn how to read music. And he's teaching these guys basically to read music, to read his system from as novices, and that's hard. You know, you can't, that's hard to do. It takes a while. It just takes a while, even for really smart guys. Even that first year when he brought it in, he had much more time and he had much more help and he had much more experienced guys who had been together for a while. So yeah, it's tough. Now explain to the listeners kind of basically when Steve said he's going to dumb it down or simplify the offense, what he did and what ways.
That? So one of the main things he did was, one thing I've been writing a lot about, and I think we've been talking a lot about, is how important Andrew Wiggins is going to be to this season because his role just completely changed when Klay Thompson got injured. I think part of why Andrew Wiggins was a good fit on this team and why I thought it was a good trade with Minnesota at the deadline was because they weren't initially asking Wiggins to do much beyond be basically a better version of Harrison Barnes. You know, they're asking him to be an off-the-ball slasher who could attack closeouts and run the floor and use his athleticism to his advantage and knock down the open jumper, all things that he is overqualified to do. But now with Klay out, they need him to be a legitimate bona fide number two option. And also, by the way, be the leader of the second unit and be a playmaker for the second unit. It also hasn't helped that Draymond's been out. So you're losing his facilitating, but you need Andrew Wiggins to basically be this all-star caliber guy, which he's never been. And what Steve realized after watching the first two games and seeing how much Wiggins was struggling was that Andrew, that he needed to basically get back to what Andrew did well in Minnesota, which was clearing the floor and basically just setting a ton of high screens for him so that he could attack downhill, get into the paint. If he doesn't have an open shot, draw enough defensive pressure so that he can kick out to open shooters,
yeah,
which he did really well repeatedly last night and ended up having 4 assists and really got the offensive flowing in some crucial stretches, which I thought was really smart on Steve's part to see that. And it also showed a dose of humility, right? Because that gets away from what Steve likes to do. Steve has talked many times about how much he hates that type of offense, but
yeah,
when you have the shortcomings that this roster has, you have to be willing to make concessions. And you know, he put Wiggins in a position to succeed yesterday, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens going forward, because you know, they're doing that because they had to simplify the offense, given that these guys just simply didn't know what they were doing out on the floor. But if it works, why stop doing it? You know, right. Even once the guys start to pick up the nuances of the system, I think that, you know, if that's going to unlock some of Andrew's greatness, if that's going to make him look like the number one pick he was supposed to be, then why stop doing it? And I think that there's a few other smaller examples of things like that he did that they could continue to incorporate into the offense going forward. But as I wrote today, this is an interesting challenge for Steve because, you know, he's trying to simplify things without losing their identity, you know, without losing the motion principles, without losing the free flowing offense that they've come to make their signature. But the reality is that Andrew Bogut's not walking through that door. Andre Iguodala isn't walking through that door. John Livingston is not on this team. Kevin Durant is on Brooklyn, you know, and without those guys, you can't execute that system the way they want to.
Yeah. And one reason Steve likes that system, which he brought in, he and Alvin Gentry, is not so much that, hey, that's my system and that's my identity. It's that he knows that maximizes Steph, and Steph is the key, you know? You right. got to maximize Steph.
Right.
So he can't go completely away from it. He can't say, we'll try something completely different, because you got to do what works best for Steph. And Steph is pretty flexible. In fact, Steph is really trying to adjust it. Nobody's more – has more heart and spirit into going with the flow and going when things break down. You know, he's not whining and crying. But, yeah, there are certain things that are best for his game. And you got to do that.
And what makes – and the thing about Steph is, as great as he is, and I believe he's a transcendent talent. I think he's the greatest shooter in NBA history. He is not a physically dominant player. You know, he's not going to necessarily put a team on his back because of his physical gifts. He's not like Kevin Durant in that way. He's not like Giannis in that way. What makes Steph so great is that he plays with such a rhythm and flow that he can make the game beautiful as long as the players around him know what they're doing and right. they can kind of help put him in those spots. But it was kind of sad watching those first couple games, because you could see Steph so frustrated. He was, yep. you know, trying to be Steph, but he couldn't, because there wasn't the space on the floor. There weren't the right angles. It just wasn't there for him. And so yep. you saw in the second half of last night's game, he just basically said, you know what, screw it. I'm going to just attack the rim as much as humanly possible, because the space isn't there, and I'm just going to try to just force things to happen. And he ended up scoring 25 points in the second half, kind of willing them to that win, thanks to Damian Lee's late three-pointer. But you know, it'll be really interesting to see if this team isn't able to channel that type of rhythm and flow, what ends up happening to Steph's season, because I could really see him having a disappointing statistical year,
yeah,
they end up having to go more toward these high screens and leaning on that type of offense.
Yeah, which would be too bad because Steph's 32, and to my eye, he's right at the top of his game. You know, physically, he hasn't lost anything. He's, if anything, maybe he's got a little tiny bit more to go. So he's there. He's all there, you know, and you hate to waste a year this late in his career, a prime, super prime year when he's just physically fit and ready to go and all that stuff. So that kind of puts more pressure on everything.
Yeah, it does. And speaking of Steve, you had an interesting column in our preview section a week or two ago about how this could be Steve's most fun season yet. And I know that you wrote in the column and you've told me that your angle initially was, could this be Steve's most challenging season yet? But he kind of shot down that narrative during your interview with him and said, there's no way it's going to be more challenging than last season, which is understandable given the fact that last season they had a league worst 15-50 record. But the interesting thing was today I asked Steve about the learning curve as a coach he's facing this season. And unprompted, he went out of his way to say, this is by far the biggest challenge me and my staff have ever had.
Yeah.
and the fact that he's already doing that about face a week into the season, I think says a lot.
Yeah. And it's funny because you wrote that and I tweeted out that I still think his first year with the Warriors was his biggest challenge, and some tweeter tweeted back. So now you're telling us you know more about Steve Kerr than Steve Kerr knows. In other words, okay, so I'm going to give it to Steve. This is his biggest challenge. I'm just going to say, I still think in some ways the first year was his biggest challenge. The reason is, as I tweeted today, if the Warriors are terrible, Steve's still going to be here at the All-Star break. And his first season, he's told me, He went in actually believing, and not even sleeping at nights, believing that, you know, he's bringing a new system in. If his players don't buy into it, and if it doesn't work, he could be gone in a matter of just a few weeks. He could be out of his first job before the All-Star break. That's not going to happen now. So in that respect, you know, he's built up enough street cred and all this stuff. He's not going to be disgraced or run out of his profession, but the challenge is huge, though. But you know what he's got to do? He's got to he can't have a rotation, can he? It's got to be different every night, depending on who's hot and who's messing up and who's not focused. And you just can't count on all these guys, you know?
I mean, we're three games in, and he's starting Juan Toscano-Anderson at power.
Right. A guy who wasn't even on the opening day roster is now being counted on to be a solid rotation guy.
Yeah, I would make the argument that this is probably his most difficult season to date. And for this reason, his first 5 years, his job as the coach was basically, and I'm not trying to minimize what he did because what he accomplished was extraordinary, but his job as a coach was basically to manage egos, to maintain that joyful ethos in the locker room and to guard against complacency, which was a legitimate challenge at times. Last season, it was a unique season in that it went off the rails so early that they basically had no other choice but to wave the white flag 4 games into the season and go all in the youth movement. And after all the goodwill and equity that they'd built up in the previous 5 years, it wasn't that difficult to ask the fan base to say, hey, just hold on with us for one season. It's going to be a down year. But we're going to get a high draft pick and we're going to parlay this into kind of what the Spurs did in 96, 97. We're going to, even though there's not a Tim Duncan out there, we're going to parlay this into years of sustained success. But now you're potentially, if this season continues to go awry, you're potentially asking a fan base to believe in you for a second straight season of losing. A fan base that's been accustomed now to winning at a very high level.
Yeah.
You're also asking the locker room to maintain the joyful ethos and camaraderie that was a driving force behind the dynasty, which is extremely difficult when you're talking about two seasons of losing. And, oh, by the way, this franchise is looking at losing hundreds of millions of dollars at the gate with no fans at games. So I know Joe Lacob feels a need for this team to at least be relevant nationally, you know, even if they don't contend for a title, at least be in the conversation, at least be in the playoffs, which is why, right, a day after news surfaced that Clay had torn his Achilles, they traded for Kelly Oubre, knowing that it was going to spike the luxury tax $70 million.
Yeah.
By the way, this team now has the largest payroll in NBA history, the biggest luxury tax bill in NBA history. It's one thing to stomach that for a winner. It's so hard to stomach that for a team that has no chance of winning for the second straight year. So that puts a lot of pressure on Steve to somehow turn water into wine a little bit and to at least make them competitive.
Yeah, you beat me to that last one. I was going to say, hey, what about the ownership? Because Joe is a pretty rational guy, right? And he knows what's going on. And he's not a fool, but a coach is not an owner's son, you know. Mm-hmm. If Steve was Joe's son, he'd be good forever. But you know, it's a job, and you got to perform. And if your coach is not performing, if he's not winning, if the team's not winning, you start looking for reasons and stuff. And Joe's patience is not infinite, especially like you said, with the financial considerations, a huge payroll and no cash coming in from the fans. So yeah, that's definitely a consideration. And I'm not saying Lakers going to get panic and fire him and make a stupid move or anything like that, but it's just not, Steve does not have lifetime tenure.
Yeah. I do think that making the finals five straight years, regardless of the talent you had on the roster, is enough equity to not get fired. I don't think he's going to get fired anytime soon. I think what is more possible is that he would just choose to walk away. You know, this is a guy who has been very honest that once it stops being fun, he's going to walk away. He doesn't necessarily want to be a coach until his 80s. So I think that's more possible. He does seem to genuinely like these guys, and this does seem to be a team that genuinely gets along and likes each other. So I think that helps, and I think it'll be really interesting to see when Draymond comes back, how much he can help. I'm not trying to be overly pessimistic here, but I do feel like Draymond returning is not going to fix everything. In fact, it's not going to fix a lot of things.
I agree, and it's kind of ominous that he's out this early in the foot thing. You get a foot thing in the NBA and in basketball. That's kind of worrisome.
Yeah.
And Draymond, the way he punishes himself and all this stuff. So that, yeah.
And Draymond's one of these guys who needs to have great players around him to be an all-star caliber guy.
Yes.
You know, you saw how much he struggled last season with a bunch of spare parts around him. Why should we believe things will suddenly be different this season? I mean, yes, Steph's on the floor, but outside of that, there's a lot of spare parts on the floor. The stakes aren't necessarily really going to be there. This is a guy who kind of needs stakes. So I'm not convinced that he'll be this dynamic defensive presence that he used to be. And, oh, by the way, like the best, one of the best playmakers in the league. I'm just not convinced he's going to be able to do that. And the fact that he's already had two significant setbacks with the foot injury and the positive coronavirus test doesn't bode super well. So it's going to be fascinating to see how this all unfolds going forward.
I'm looking forward to seeing what Draymond's temperament is going to be like and what his patience is going to be like, because, you know, in the past he get pissed off at guys, you know, like Kevin Durant. And he's not afraid to yell, and he's not afraid to blow his stack of teammates. And I think he's learned over the years, he's kind of mellowed a little bit and knowing that he's got to soften his edge a little bit. But what's going to happen when he gets with these guys, when Oubre and Wiggins and stuff start going off the rails a little bit?
Right.
How much patience is Draymond going to have with that kind of stuff?
Well, early last season, you remember he kind of exploded a couple times, was very frustrated about realizing how bad they were. And
yeah.
Then I know Steve pulled him aside and had a couple conversations with him, and he basically decided, I'm just going to accept reality and deal with it. And he was pretty relatively jovial the rest of the season, given the circumstances. But obviously his play was not great. And I wonder if those two things are connected, right? I mean, I kind of feel like he needs that chip on his shoulder on and off the court to be a great player. And if he just resigns himself to the fact that they're not good, is he going to be a great player? You know, so it'll be interesting. But Scott, I really appreciate you, man, joining me on the pod, stepping away from your vacation, shows your commitment level. And means a lot. Where can our listeners find your stuff in case they're silly enough to not already be following you?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Scott Osler. And I also have my son Gabe and I have a Twitter feed, which is Osler Sports. And we do a weekly podcast on that. And we've got a good one up there now. It's kind of interesting. We interview an old baseball guy, and that's a lot of fun. So if anybody wants to check that out. And I guess that's about it.
Yeah, and I went on there a couple weeks ago. It was a good time. So definitely listen to that. And Scott, hope you have a good
time. You put us on the map. You know, we were struggling, and then you came out and did your guest spot, and that just shot us up the popularity polls. So we appreciate that.
Warriors Off Court is a production of the San Francisco Chronicle. Support Warriors Off Court and the newsroom that creates it by signing up for a Chronicle membership at sfchronicle.com/pod.